Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. And joining us now is Kevin DeLeon, who's the president pro tem of the California State Senate, who has served in the California State Legislature for 11 years, representing the Los Angeles area since 2014. He's currently challenging incumbent Democratic U.S. Senator Dianne Feinstein in the upcoming California primary on June the 5th. Welcome to Background Briefing, Kevin DeLeon.
Well, thank you, Ian. I appreciate the invitation. And first and foremost, I want to say happy Mother's Day to all the amazing mothers throughout Southern California and throughout the state.
Well, in terms of your own mother, you are the youngest child of a single mother who emigrated to this country with a third grade education. I noticed a couple of days ago on NPR, the former head of Homeland Security, General Kelly, now the White House Chief of Staff, suggested that while he thought that good people were coming in from the South into this country, that they don't assimilate, that they only have a fifth and sixth grade education at best. Your mother, with a third grade education, it looks like she assimilated. You became the leader of the California Senate. California has just been rated as the world's fifth largest economy. So what do you think about General Kelly's recent statement?
It's unfortunate, and it's deeply sad that this administration, first and foremost to the president, through the Chief of Staff, White House Chief of Staff, John Kelly, as well as our current Homeland Security Secretary, and of course, Jeff Sessions, the Attorney General, have espoused these very ultra-nationalistic perspectives nationwide that has really tainted the debate on the issue of immigration. I can tell you this is the way you articulate it, Ian, was perfect. Had there been a merit-based immigration system in place back in the 60s and 70s, quite frankly, I'd never been the leader of the California State Senate, today the fifth largest economy in the world. And that's what makes California so magical, because we welcome people from every corner of this earth who play by the rules, who obey our laws, who pay their taxes, and who want to become full-fledged American citizens. And we have so many hard-working families that have been here for years, if not decades, and they have not been able to normalize their status because you have a broken, dysfunctional immigration system in Washington. And quite frankly, you have leaders of Congress, and you have members of Congress who have displayed no leadership or courage to resolve this issue once and for all. So the views that are being espoused are quite frankly are racist. And had they those views been in place statutorily back in the day, then I wouldn't be the leader of the California State Senate.
And do you get the impression that the federal government, led by Donald Trump, is at war with California? It certainly seems the case. For example, the House, in their so-called tax reform bill, essentially punished the successful state of California by raising our taxes effectively. Now there are 14, I think, Republican Congress representatives in this state. I imagine they're in jeopardy in this forthcoming election. They should be. It seems that they raised our taxes out of spite because we're a successful state. So give me a sense of how you see, if indeed you agree that there appears to be a war being conducted by Donald Trump. He seems to have some grudge against California.
Well, Ian, I think that the president and this administration is at war with California on a whole variety of issues, because back on November 8th in 2016, Californians rejected overwhelmingly in the millions by a margin of 2-1 the politics fueled by resentment, fueled by misogyny, and fueled by bigotry. This president has been at war with us since day one on the issue of immigration and Dreamers. We are the biggest state with the largest number of immigrants, whether they're naturalized U.S. citizens, whether they're legal permanent residents, TPS, undocumented immigrants, or DACA Dreamer students. He's been at war with California because of our environmental policies and our quest to clean our air and to clean up our water so our children can breathe clean air into their lungs. He's been at war with California based on our most far-reaching progressive climate change policies, which are a model not just for the rest of the country, but for the entire world. by pulling out of the Paris Accords of 2015. He's at war, as you just mentioned, against California and our taxpayers by moving forward the GOP tax plan of 2017 in December, the largest tax break for the wealthy and corporations in the United States history. And he purposefully drafted a measure that targeted the state of California and roughly about 5 million taxpayers by reducing what we call the SALT, the state and local tax deduction, to $10,000 cap. The average deduction that a Californian makes on the SALT deduction is roughly about $18,000 to $20,000 that we Californians deduct from their federal taxes. By doing so, these individuals obviously will have to pay more in their taxes, and he did it on purpose to hurt California, New York, and New Jersey, three states, but especially California, that overwhelmingly voted against him and his policies. So you have a president for the, at least in modern political history, that has systematically targeted a state like California because of our values, because we value inclusivity and diversity. But what's interesting is what you pointed, Ian, is that if we were the most progressive state, say theoretically, and that's not to say that we still don't have a lot of work to do here in our home state, because we still do, but if we were theoretically the most progressive state in the country, and our economy was spiraling downward, and unemployment was extraordinarily high, and we were beset with really big challenges like other parts of the country, then I would even have to question myself, are policies making life better or not? But the reality is this. We have raised the minimum wage to $15 an hour, the highest in the nation. We have moved policies that provide equal pay for women doing equal work. We have moved forward the most progressive climate change policies in the world. And we are protecting our immigrant families from being separated from this administration. All of that, and as you just mentioned, we're the fifth largest economy in the world. Using GDP, and I know there's other probably better metrics we can utilize, but as an economic standard that everyone uses universally right now, we just surpassed the United Kingdom. So Donald Trump and his administration could actually look at California as a model for other states, particularly red states, where there's high unemployment, red states where they overly rely on federal tax dollars from Washington, D.C., just to get by. So he is at war with California, has been since day one.
And, of course, the federal government under Donald Trump is now increasing its massive federal deficit and debt, while California, the state of California, has a budget surplus. And, again, I'm speaking with Kevin DeLeon, the president pro tem of the California State Senate, who has served in the California State Legislature for 11 years, representing the Los Angeles area since 2014, and he's currently challenging incumbent Democratic U.S. Senator Dianne Feinstein in the upcoming California primary on June the 5th. We've just learned that registered Republicans in the state of California down to their lowest level ever, 25%. Independents will soon be the biggest bloc. Former Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, Republican, is even thinking about forming a kind of center-right alternative to the California Republican Party. As a Democrat, and think of this in terms of the challenge, because I was just reading Sunday's New York Times suggesting that the blue wave that's expected is having problems. There are too many Democrats running against each other in the primaries, obviously splitting the money that's available or that they can raise. There's a certain cautionary note there. But how do you, if the center and the center right is disaffected with the far right that's captured the Republican Party, does that mean that the Democrats have a fertile field there to reach out into?
I think that our values and our message, which without question needs to be worked on, but I think that because we're such an inclusive party, that we have the ability to reach out to those who are disaffected and who are turned off by the extreme elements of the Republican Party, who quite frankly have taken over their own party. I've spoken with many Republicans who feel like they're hostages in their own Republican Party. They don't feel comfortable becoming Democrats, but I try to convey to them and say, listen, when it comes to health care, single-payer universal health care system, there's many countries throughout the world who have successfully implemented this type of health care system. And you have conservatives as well as progressives and those in the middle who enjoy the benefits of a universal health care system. Our own Veterans Administration, our own VA system is a universal health care system. I said, let's not get lost on the labels or the symbolism, but this is a universal health care system benefits all Americans and all Californians, regardless of your political ideology. The issue of clean energy and global warming, that's scientific, but unfortunately, it's political. And if you believe in clean air and clean water, and if you believe that global warming is an existential threat to our humanity, to our economy, to our future, then there's no reason at all whatsoever that you shouldn't join the Democratic Party. This is not about clean energy versus fossil fuels. This is about the future of this economy, the future of our children. And in California, we have demonstrated that we have decoupled and delinked carbon from GDP, meaning that we have created 500,000 jobs in the clean energy space in California alone, Ian, to be specific. That means we have 10 times more jobs in the clean energy space in California than there are coal mining jobs in all of America. And before Donald Trump became president, unfortunately through the antiquated electoral college system that we have, we had polling data that showed that even many Republicans were finally in agreement that there should be a reasonable pathway that's fair to citizenship for the millions of hardworking immigrants who've been here for decades in this country. They have been hijacked by very extreme elements within the party. I do believe it's fertile ground. It may take a little while for folks to come to the conclusion that perhaps that the policies that we have moved forward within the Democratic Party, at least in California, I can only speak for California, are reasonable policies that improve the human condition for all individuals, regardless of who you are and regardless of where you come from.
And you, of course, resigned from your leadership position as head of the California State Senate to run against the longtime incumbent U.S. Senator here, Dianne Feinstein, in the state of California. Many pundits see it as an uphill battle, but nevertheless, you came within 6 percentage points of winning the Democratic nomination outright at the California State Democratic Convention in February, with the state primary coming up soon on June the 5th. I just noticed some ads by Senator Feinstein where she sort of ties her record on gun control to the young students in Parkland High School in Florida whose classmates were massacred along with their teachers and who have been leading a very creative and very effective campaign. One of the paradoxes of the Democratic Party at writ large is that you have people like Bernie Sanders, even though he's not a Democrat, he ran for president on the Democratic ticket and was extremely successful and reached out and motivated the young. It looks like Joe Biden, former vice president, will also run in 2020. So will Bernie. So you'll have, and then you've got on top of that Nancy Pelosi, who all of these politicians that I'm mentioning are all in their 80s. So how do you bridge that gap? You've got the leaders of the party, essentially octogenarians, but the new energy coming in from 17-year-olds, soon to be 18 and able to vote.
Well, Ian, that's a very good question, and I'll let others who are much smarter than I and more insightful sort of provide color commentary with regards to that question. But let me say this. It should never be about ageism, because I think that everyone has a right to run for political office, regardless of their age. Ultimately, it's about values, Ian, because the values represented in Congress today, regardless of party, are more like Georgetown values and not American values, and certainly not California values. I think it's time that we move the nation's capital to California, quite frankly, and I think it's time that we export California values to Washington, not the other way around. You made an example of Bernie Sanders. I don't know Bernie Sanders personally, but I do know that his political platform, his values, or that of a progressive individual, whether it is single-payer, Medicare for all, the issues of climate change, immigration, debt-free college education, and he was able to transform and energize and inspire young folks, in particular millennials, to come into the fold politically. Many folks who had never participated electorally in any type of political event, and he was able to do so. So ultimately, at the end of the day, this comes down to values and individuals who will move forward a political platform that improves the human condition for all individuals, politicians, those who aspire to be elected officials, who move an agenda and use their political capital to effectuate positive change for all Americans, regardless of who you are and where you come from, who you love, what your legal status is, what God you pray to. And I think that what we are witnessing, without question, is a real desire to want to have a change in Washington, regardless of political affiliation, a voice that they believe is reflective of today's California as opposed to the California of 25 years ago. And that's why I'm running, to be that voice, because I am a reflection of the incredible changes that the state has gone through the past 25 years. We've never had a Latino U.S. senator representing the state with the largest number of Latinos in the United States of America. But it's not just about that. Again, it's about the values, and whether folks want to call them progressive values, they can call them what they want to call them. You know, but I have always moved forward forcefully using my political capital, policies that don't just push the envelope, that disrupt the status quo. And sometimes folks view it as a threat to the establishment authority. But if we don't do it, Ian, we're never going to be given that opportunity, because we're not going to be the chosen one. Again, had my mother not had the courage to cross a border and against the current of ethnic bigotry, had she fallen, you know, had she just fell into line and was told what to do and how to do it and to know her place, again, I wouldn't be the leader of the California State Senate, let alone a candidate for U.S. Senate representing all of California. You can't let folks tell you know your place, know when it's your time, because this is not a monarchy either. This is our opportunity to have a voice heard, and when you have choice, choice is a good thing, and let the people decide.
So if the people want to contact you, what? How do they do it?
Well, I would say, Ian, please go to kevindeleon.com, kevindeleon.com, and a lot of progressives have really come together behind my candidacy. Daily Kos, the progressives of democracy, progressives of America have come together behind my candidacy, with Jim Dean and Marcos, and half of the county board of supervisors from San Francisco, and 7 of the 10 city council members of San Jose, and the mayor and council members of Berkeley. And it's been wonderful going up and down the state, engaging with everyday voters, even Trump supporters, who, when they see me, obviously you can imagine that the reception I receive, you know, from Trump supporters. But I tell them to listen, I'm going to fight for you as well too, because you deserve access to health care. Your children deserve access to higher education. Your children deserve to breathe clean air, because at the end of the day, the current president is not going to deliver on any of his promises to you. That's just the bottom line. And but please, you know, join us at kevindeleon.com. Obviously, the election is coming up June 5th. There's 32 candidates. That's because of the open primary system that we have now. And our goal is to narrow it down from 32 to 2. And that's why I think it's absolutely critical strategically that we all come together, because the bottom line is this, is if a Republican squeezes into that second spot, our opportunities for progressive values be represented in Washington fall by the wayside, at least here in California. And there's nothing more that the Feinstein team would like than to have a Republican come into second place.
Right.
They'll go to vacation, you know, on June 6th for the whole rest of the year.
Mm. Well, the same applies on the governor's race, too, that the front runner, Gavin Newsom, would probably might well end up running against a Republican. So I thank you for joining us, Kevin DeLeon.
Ian, I thank you very much. It was a pleasure, and it was an honor, and I hope to come on the radio with you once again.
Definitely. And again, I've been speaking with Kevin DeLeon, who's the president pro tem of the California State Senate. He served in the California State Legislature for 11 years, representing the Los Angeles area since 2014, and he's currently challenging incumbent Democratic U.S. Senator Dianne Feinstein in the upcoming California primary on June the 5th. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon and assistant producer Kathleen Ash. This program's available for podcasting at backgroundbriefing.org, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.